Townsville's Reed Park is the next destination on the 2020 Supercars Tour. And guess what? It's a doubleheader again with three 111-kilometre races on each weekend. It's now a super sprint with three 111-kilometre races for each weekend. This is a great track, part street circuit, part racetrack. Townsville has it all. Can Team 18 continue its upward trajectory, and what can Nick Percat do? This is the doubleheader that could decide the championship. This is Supercars in Preview.
Well, welcome listeners to the preview of the Townsville doubleheader. And I'm joined by Clarkie. How are you going, Clarkie?
Hey, Nim, not bad. I'm still frustrated, but I'm enjoying the fact I'm car racing on the telly, but I'm frustrated that I'm not able to get to the track. So that's doing my head in. I'm just lacking information and I'm lacking knowledge. So if I come across as a bit of a dummy, that's my excuse this week.
Well, I do know that you're at the tracks in the garages and find out all information. So I'll tell you, it must be really frustrating. I think the last round that you went to was Clipsal 500. Sorry, it's not Clipsal anymore, Adelaide. And it looks like we may not even get to a round any other time this year. This might be the only round that we're going to get to for the whole championship.
I know, it's a bit frightening to sit back and think that we might not even be at Bathurst. I mean, yeah, we've been sitting back hoping to suffer all of this stuff through the COVID situation and maybe get to Bathurst, but even that's looking unlikely at the moment. So might make my Bathurst book a little sketchy, but it'll have pretty pictures.
I like that. Well, time to crack this egg and get into it. First, some news. Bathurst has a new sponsor from 2021 to 2025. Five-year deal. Supercheap have been the sponsor since 2005. That's a big change.
It is a big change, and from what I understand, it was actually a bidding war to get this. So Repco... bidding war. Yep. So Repco jumped onto the Shell cars, I think, last year, so getting heavily back into top-level touring car racing in Australia, and they decided they wanted the Bathurst 1000, and they went out there. Obviously, the rights were up for renewal, and they put in a competitive bid. Supercheap apparently found out what their bid was and upped their own bid. And then Repco came back and outbid them again. That's certainly the mail on the streets. So it's been a bit of a windfall for supercars. And Repco certainly very keen to express to Australia and remind them of their racing credentials in this country.
Well, that's really good news considering this new COVID world order, right? That their Repco and Supercheap Auto felt like there was the value of Bathurst. It's just this race just keeps on keeping on.
Well, it is an amazing event in the sporting infrastructure of Australia, obviously, but it's such a critical event to motorsport in this country. I mean, we wouldn't be sitting there watching supercars today if it wasn't for Bathurst. You know, it was the whole touring car resurgence or surge through the 70s and so forth on the back of Bathurst that created our dominance of this class of car racing. So it's an iconic event. It's a big name event. And I think if you can get your name attached to it, then you're going to do all right. And I think, yeah, that's what Repco wants. They want people to know them.
They've been getting some mileage out of it now. It's almost like they've sponsored it this year. I mean, they're on the DJR team Penske cars as well. So there's Repco everywhere. I'm surely Supercheap Auto's a little pissed.
Oh, they're very pissed by the comments I've heard. There's a lot of grumpiness about it all. But, you know, at the end of the day, we live in a competitive world and, you know, Repco's gone out and decided what they wanted and they've done it. And I'm just kind of a bit spewing that I didn't apply for the job they had going recently because I would have been looking after the whole thing. But that would have kept me out of doing this. So, yes, so it's interesting. It'll be interesting times. And how quickly will we adapt to be calling it the Repco Bathurst 1000 instead of the Supercheap Auto Bathurst 1000? So, as I say, you go back and think we still call the Adelaide 500 the Clipsal 500. So, you know, 16 years is a long time.
Okay. There's a bit of fallout from Darwin with the pit lane antics. Some changes to the rules?
Yeah, well, we remember that Jamie Whincup came out of his pit bay and ended up balking Fabian Coulthard when he was coming in. And it was decided that there was no penalty there because the rules said that you couldn't balk a car who was entirely in the fast lane. Now, Fabian obviously wasn't in the fast lane, but he was clearly disadvantaged by this. So they've changed the rules now to reflect the fact that if you balk anybody, it's a bad thing. So if the rules from Hidden Valley 2 were applied to Hidden Valley 1, Jamie Whincup would have had a penalty.
Really?
And that's what they've done. And I think it's a very smart move. I like the fact that they've spotted an error in their wording and they've gone out and fixed it. So good on them.
Walkinshaw talking to manufacturers, and there's a bit of a word that they may have had a manufacturer pretty much locked away. Then the COVID thing hit.
Yeah, I think Ryan's been quoted as saying they had two manufacturers lined up, one who'd never been involved in the sport and one who had been involved in the sport. They didn't tell us which one, but he said he almost had one of them signed up when the COVID crisis hit and strangled all the finances. But that hasn't stopped them going out there and trying for other ones. So they're still going, and he believes they will have a new manufacturer signed up by the end of this year, but it won't mean that they will be on the cars next year. They'll still run Commodores next season.
So when you talk that they've been in the sport, is he talking back the history of the sport or just the supercar history of the sport? Because I'm hearing it's Toyota or BMW.
Yeah, BMW is the hot goss because if you look at the Walkinshaw structure, it's Walkinshaw Andretti United. Andretti Motorsport runs BMW's electric cars in the Formula E series, so there's a very strong connection on that side of it. Chas Mostert also has a strong connection with BMW, having raced for them at Daytona and a couple of other races. So the goss was that, you know, BMW were the ones they were really looking at to run, you know, probably a 6-series coupe or maybe even a 4-series coupe in the series. But, you know, everybody's tight now. The automotive market's, you know, destroyed by what's going on. So it would take a bold move for somebody to come out and throw a few million bucks at it.
Well, you wouldn't want to be selling new cars at the moment, would you?
No, you wouldn't. Absolutely not.
Not in Australia. That's why Super Cheap Auto and Repco are doing really well, because everybody's keeping their cars, not buying new ones. They have to buy a new fan belt instead.
Exactly. You've got to keep them running, you know. So let's keep going. But it's interesting. It's, you think about who can benefit from being involved in supercars is my question. And I still think that the one manufacturer that could gain the most out of this is Kia. So anybody who's never driven a Kia Stinger GT, go down to your local work, you know, local Kia dealer when you can. Of course, it'll be a while before you can do that in Melbourne, but anywhere else in Australia, you could probably do it tomorrow. Go down and drive us Kia Stinger GT and come away from it and telling me that's not a great car. And think you're going to sell a sporting four-door sedan and you've got no credentials in that place in the world. How's the best way to do it? Motor racing.
Well, look, if people go out and have a drive of the Stinger GT, get on our Facebook and tell us what you think. Because the fact is, here in Victoria, we can't do that. So, guys, give us a comment on the Kia Stinger GT, whether it's good or bad, whatever you think. We'd love to hear what your views are.
Well, I would have bought one, Nev, except that the back seat's not got enough headroom for my very tall son. So that was the only reason I did not buy a Stinger GT. It's a great car. But as I say, you know, the question is, what do you get out of it? So what would Toyota get out of being involved in motorsport in Australia? And the short answer is, I don't think much at all. You know, Toyota's not a motorsport brand. Yeah, the Supra's a cracking car, but I don't think it's suited to this class of racing. It's a sports car, and it would kind of destroy the DNA of the class a little bit too much. So I think we're looking at those other things. So anybody who's got a big two-door coupe, so Nissan, for instance, could run a GTR. You know, Mercedes could run a two-door coupe. Audi could run their two-door coupe. Lexus could do it. You know, because we know that what is going to happen is that we will be running two-door cars next year predominantly, or not next year, the year after, I would think, because next year, I think, because of what's gone on this year, we'll still be mostly Commodores and Mustangs. But the year after, the world's going to change.
Okay. Talking about, well, staying included and all that kind of stuff, speculation continues of a doubleheader at Queensland Raceway after Townsville. What's your latest on that?
Well, it's still a possibility, and they're talking about replacing the Sandown race with a Queensland Raceway one and then going to Queensland Raceway again the week after that. And so they have a double header there. The problem is that the COVID numbers are starting to increase in Queensland. So they're increasing their COVID restrictions. So we might be thinking this is going to happen, and then we might end up not being able to do it at all. If things go to plan, I think we'll find somewhere in the next week we'll be told that we're going to Queensland Raceway, but there'll be a little bit of an asterisk at the end of it depending on what happens with the numbers. And remember, must remember, Northern Territory placed a restriction on people travelling from Brisbane because of their COVID numbers. So we know they're increasing. We know they've got a problem that's starting to stick its nose up there.
Well, do you have any idea of the dates they would have the doubleheader?
Yeah, it would be the 19th and 20th of September, which is the Sandown weekend. Yep. And then it would be the following weekend, which is the 26th and 27th of September. And, of course, that means you would only have a week off between there and Bathurst. So that's where the speculation and the next news item, which is that there's a chance Bathurst is going to move back a week or two.
Well, that's what I was going to talk to you, move back a week or two and end the season. I mean, if it ended the season at the start of October, that's a very early ending. I think there's a lot of scope to move Bathurst back a bit. Obviously, you don't want the weather to get too warm because drivers starting, well, not expiring, but they get overheated up. There's no lead-in for co-drivers or anything for this.
Yeah, that's the challenge, is that like some of these co-drivers won't have raced since February. I remember reading Tim Slade, who's going to be running with Scott McLaughlin, hasn't driven a race car since February. So it's a big, big thing to suddenly throw them in when there's no lead up at all. So your question was, there's a bit of pressure to say, if we're going to do Queensland, can we do the Queensland 500? But the problem is they don't want to be doing pit stops that have fuel stops at the moment, because that means you've got to get more people on the road and more people into there. And the chat's going to be the big challenge for Bathurst is that if we've got to get people from Victoria into Bathurst to load up the Walkinshaw and the Tickford teams, et cetera, so they can do the fuel stops. So we've got to be very careful how we handle these next few weeks and get through it all properly. And it even involves people like me. If I want to get to Bathurst, I might have to go and quarantine myself in New South Wales for 2 weeks before the race so that I can get to the race itself.
Would you do it?
The teams are going to have to do the same. Would I do it? Absolutely, I would do it. If I'm allowed to go to Bathurst and I have to quarantine for 2 weeks to do it, I will be doing that.
Sounds like you're not married.
No, well, I'll just hand the kids off to somebody else and say, here, you take them, and I'll go. But, it is the biggest race weekend in Australia for motor racing people. And, if you've never been there, you need to go clearly. I've been to 35 of them now, I think, and I want to keep that run going. So, yes. I'm hoping that they actually put it back 2 weeks, not 1 week.
Well, folks, he's been to 35 Bathurst and he hasn't camped on the mountain once. You haven't experienced Bathurst unless you've dodged a flaming toilet roll. Let's face it.
I've done that.
Oh, yeah, but then you ran back down to the bottom of the mountain and went back to your hotel room.
Yeah, like a squealing girl.
Yeah, I know. In fact, the girl that was with us, who was disguised as a bloke, squealed less than you did.
But well, I'll let you on a secret. I might actually be doing it in a caravan this year if I have to.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So that's what I've been thinking about doing. So I'm looking for a sponsor.
Okay, well, let's get into the round. We're actually here to talk about Townsville formats. What's going on with formats? I'm thinking it's the same. It's the same race length. Because let's face it, no fuel stops in the pit stop dictates the length of a race.
Yeah, I think we're looking about 120 kilometres on a tank of fuel. So all the races have been planned to be shorter than that. So this Townsville weekend, we're looking at 3 39-lap races, which is 111 kilometres per race. And, of course, it's the super sprint format. So the format's pretty much locked in. So we have qualifying on the Saturday will be the same thing. So we're going to have 24 starting, 4 will drop out, then we'll have another 10 dropout this time. So we're going to a top 10 shootout now instead of the top 15 shootout. So the drivers are going to have to be a little bit more alert. Yeah, you can't do what Jamie Wincup did in Darwin, for instance, and qualify 13th and then snag pole. You're going to have to be in the top 10. So that's the only significant change to the structure of the weekend, I think, is that top 10 versus as opposed to the top 15.
I like the top 10 shootout. I think I think the 15 was a bit too much. But it's soft tyres only for this first round of the doubleheader?
No, for both rounds. Soft tyres for both weekends this time around, which we saw in Darwin, the soft tyre only round was a bit more mundane than the hard tyre, soft tyre. So the mixed compound round seems to give a bit difference. What's going to be different here to Darwin is that this track is a higher degradation, so it's going to damage the tyres a little bit more. So you're not going to be able to effectively do the entire race distance on one set of soft tyres. So it's going to have that variable brought into play, and that will hopefully give us the mix-up that we need.
Well, I'm thinking it's not the degradation is as much as SMP or Sydney Motorsport Park, but it's definitely more than Hidden Valley. I would say almost halfway between, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, that'd be about right. I think we're talking 39 laps, so I think if you got 20 laps out of a soft tyre up there, I think you'd be doing all right. So I'd be expecting it to drop off the cliff about half race distance.
I'm thinking that's a question I'm going to ask Anton.
Yeah, hopefully he knows the answer.
I hope so. One thing for the fans, everybody's going to be able to watch this round, very similar to Darwin, where it's all going to be there on Channel 10 as well as Foxtel. And so everybody's going to be able to watch it. I'm assuming the weekend after is just exclusively Foxtel.
No, I heard both were on Channel 10, but we'll wait and see. We'll wait and see the difference. We'll wait and see. I mean, at the moment, we know definitely this weekend is on Channel 10, so hopefully the weekend after is as well. And, that's good for the sport, obviously, because it gives you a broader reach than you're getting otherwise. And as you know, people are craving sport on TV, so they'll turn on to watch supercars if they can get to it.
Well, in the fullness of time, we'll soon find out about all that. Okay.
Yep.
Critical numbers. Qualifying last year.
I know these are the sort of things that excite me, so I don't know whether it excites anybody else, but when I go to a racetrack, I want to know what am I looking for when the cars hit the track. So now that I'm sitting at home, I have the Supercars app running on my telephone with the Supercars live timing thing, and then I've got another timing screen running from NatSoft, which runs on another screen, and then I've, of course, got the big TV in the middle of it all. And so what I'm looking for is, when we're going out there for qualifying, what are the times that we're looking for? So we want to see last year in Dave Reynolds' qualifying lap on the Saturday, he did a 20.3624 in the first sector. The fastest in the next sector was Chaz Mostert. He did a 27.0386. And the last one was Will Davison in the last sector on 24.5259. And the theoretical best lap, if we'd put it all together, was 1:11.9269 seconds would be the ideal lap if you put it all together. So they're the times that we're looking for. So when we want to know who's going fast, we want to know if they're close to those times. And that's what you're going to be hunting for. And what you might see early on, especially in practice, you might see them not doing a complete lap, but you're looking to see if they can get those sectors. So if you're not subscribing yet to the Supercars app and you're stuck at home watching this thing, make sure you subscribe. It's not that expensive and you get the timing screen.
Well, you get the timing screen for free anyway off the website. It's live timing. It's already there for free.
Yes, you do if you're smart enough. But
yeah. No, it's a big button on the Supercar website, live timing.
And that's free, is it?
Timing screen, yeah.
Oh, what do I pay for then? Golly gosh. I actually use both of them, but there's also the one you can get from NatSoft as well. But the Supercar app on your telephone, like I can actually choose to only have the sectors showing
so
I can see who's doing what and where. But, it's all about finding your own comfort level and what you're going to get to. And but as I say, keep your eye on those sector times because that's what I want to know when I go to a racetrack.
Okay, last year, this is a good round. Bit of controversial round as well. Reynolds and McLaughlin got together. Let's start talking about a bit of that.
I know. How feisty did that get? There was a real dummy spit. And it kind of was at the peak of the Mustangs got an unfair advantage line that Dave Reynolds was running every weekend. But, of course, that was a bit of a mistake, I think. My personal opinion is that it was a bit of a mistake by Dave Reynolds.
He went for a gap.
Caused the crash.
I reckon that Scotty McLaughlin tried to cover it, moved over too late, and they came together. He didn't give any racing room. He was already there.
Whichever way. I want people to race, And I don't even mind dummy spits afterwards. I don't mind tantrums and dummy spits and all of those sort of things because it actually shows you care about what you're doing. If you come out there and say, oh, well, no good, bad luck, oh, well, let's move on, then I'm going to reckon you're not a racing driver. So I like the fact that they were having a bit of an argument and a Twitter dummy spit afterwards. So, and it's still going today. Now you've got Ryan Story going with Barry Ryan. So, the war between the two is just going and, this is what we need. Go for it.
Who cares? Who cares? Yeah. Oh, sorry, we care. We do care.
We do care.
It's all about. Who cares?
Yeah, well, you've got to have something to talk about, don't you?
Oh, man. Okay, yes. Let's verbal fisticuffs. Fantastic.
Yeah. But it was an interesting weekend last year because we had a dry race on the Saturday and a wet race on the Sunday. And, of course, all what we had last year was we were in the Townsville 400 structure. So we had the two 200-kilometre races instead of the three 100. It was a bit easier structured. It probably would have been easier for us to do a podcast reviewing it with the two races rather than three. But anyway.
Well, also what happened, Jamie Wincup had a big crash in the rain.
Yeah, I know. We talked about it, didn't we? We spoke last week because Wincup had the crash at Darwin, and you say, oh, rare mistake. Well, he made one here as well, and he kind of slammed quite hard into the wall, so did a bit of damage, I think. You know, the rain in Townsville is a hard thing because it's a tricky track.
Well, what are you saying? It's hard rain in Townsville.
Yeah, hard rain's going to fall. No, it's just because it's got the street circuit and the proper racing car track. You know, you've got different traction levels. You've got paintings, that, you know, like lines all over the road from right-hand turn arrows and all of those sort of things to navigate. So once it gets wet, you know, it gets pretty hairy on those sort of tracks. You know, you can't blame Jamie too much because he was going hard, but he didn't win because he crashed.
And there was also a fire in pit lane, Brad Jones Racing.
I know, how spectacular was that? Yeah, a whole car, like he left the pits with the fuel nozzle still attached and it spewed fuel over the back of the car and it caught fire and they put it out and he jumped out of the car thinking that's it and then he got back in the car and went on racing.
This is the end of pit lane. He drove to the end of pit lane and then jumped out of the car and went, hang on, I can keep going.
Yeah, once he worked out that there was no real damage, it was just superficial, off they went. But
one
good thing there was to watch the other teams jump in and with their fire extinguishers and help them. So it just shows there is a bit of camaraderie in pit lane, even though they're fierce rivals.
Okay, well, last year, just recapping, on Saturday, Scott McLaughlin won from Jamie Wincup and Chaz Mostert. And then on Sunday, Shane Van Gisbergen won. Fabian Coulthard was second, followed by Cam Waters. So all the usual suspects, because that was Red Bull Racing and DJR Team Penske and Tickford. They all took the top three spots.
Yeah, and I think we're not going to see that so simply this year because we're seeing other teams emerging at the moment and other teams struggling, and the race format's going to suit a bit of difference in there, and I think the tyre wear is going to open it up as well. So, you know, we might see something clever again. We might see your Nick Percats or the Team 18 mob jumping up and doing something special again.
Well, I want to get into the current situation leading into Townsville. Wins. Scott McLaughlin's obviously ahead of the wins list. What are the wins factor?
Well, he's got the eight wins so far this year and Street's in front. So Jamie Wincup's on two wins, Nick Percat's on two wins, Anton DiPasquale's got one and Jack LeBrock's got one as well. But aside from just the win rate there is that, you know, Scotty McLaughlin's got 11 podiums from 14 starts, which is pretty impressive.
That's amazing. Well, it's his poles that's probably helped him do that. What's his pole score again?
Well, he's got eight pole positions out of 16 because there's two poles that didn't turn into races. So he's got pole position in half the races so far this year, which is pretty significant. Then Jamie Wincup's on four pole positions, Van Gisbergen one, and, of course, that lone pole position to Andre Heimgartner at Sydney Motorsport Park.
Okay. And just to recap the driver standings, Scott McLaughlin's in first on 1,324 points, followed by Jamie Wincup on 1,147 points. In third is Shane Van Gisbergen on 979. Chaz Mostert on 972. Fifth is Nick Percat on 915. Cameron Waters on 893. Mark Winterbottom on 890. Davey Reynolds on 872. Fabian Coulthard on 862. And rounding out the top 10, Lee Holdsworth in 845. I'm going to ask you, Clarkie, it's crystal ball time. Who do you think's going to win? Who do you think's going to be the podium? Is that not time for a win? Well, you can go for a win if you want, but what's the podium?
It's so hard to go past Scott McLaughlin, unfortunately, isn't it? But that said, it can't always go to plan. So I think if something could go wrong, this is a good place for it to go wrong. But that said, I think he'll come away winning around again. I'm liking Team 18 and I'm liking Nick Percat. I think we're going to see some pretty significant efforts from those three, which is Scott Pye and Mark Winterbottom at Team 18 and Nick Percat. And I would think one of the Red Bull racing cars, but not both of them at the same time.
Well, I'm going to go Scott McLaughlin, Scott Pye and Shane Van Gisbergen for the podium for that week.
There you go. Well, that'll smash your crystal balls.
Well, I've got balls. None of them are crystal. So I'm only guessing, aren't I?
Yeah.
Well, folks, that's it from myself and Andrew for our preview. Coming up, we've got Anton DiPasquale, who's going to give us his thoughts on Townsville, give us a bit of insight, a bit of the tyre wear. We've got questions to ask him. I mean, he's going to take us for, well, his lap at the track and explain what needs to be done to try and get that perfect qualifying lap of 1:11.9269. See if how close we can get to that. Okay, on the line, we'd like to welcome Anton DiPasquale for our preview of Townsville. Welcome, Anton.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
So you've won your first race now. How does it feel? I mean, 71 into it, so you've been waiting a while. Buzzed?
Yeah, man. It's always a good feeling whenever you hit sort of a milestone or a goal that you want to achieve. Obviously, making supercars was a goal, then, you know, first top 10, then it moves into the first podium, and then that eventuates into a win, and then you just keep ticking off these goals you want to achieve, and obviously you get the feeling gets better and better the more you do it. So it's probably, you know, we didn't get to celebrate on a podium and stuff like that with everything going on, so probably hopefully one day get another win and get to do it properly in terms of celebration. But yeah, nonetheless, it was an awesome experience and an awesome feeling.
Does it make it feel just that little bit hollow, that no crowd aspect to it? I mean, as you say, like, there's no podium, but there's also nothing else, is there? All you've got is your little team to celebrate with. Just feels like a bit strange.
Yeah, so compared to, say, my first podium, when you have all the rules obviously a bit different, and that was last year and everything, so you have just the crowd, and then the same thing, you have a podium, but even when you get out of the car, your whole team is there. So with everything now, there's only one or two people from the whole team can come down after the race. So you miss that whole kind of thing. Obviously, it didn't take the shine off the win and how it feels, but you miss probably a little bit of that initial, you know, celebration with everyone. But nonetheless, we're still pretty happy and pretty chuffed.
Doesn't really matter, does it? You're a race winner and that's all that counts.
Yeah, something like that.
Did you talk to Betty? What was her reaction on the phone?
So by the time we got through everything, all the media stuff and everything, we've FaceTimed Betty afterwards, and she was obviously stoked. Her and Daniel were watching at home and screaming at the TV and everything. So as you imagine, they're always stoked to be part of it, and it's a shame that they're not here to enjoy it with us, because obviously they got me on this journey and part of the team early days and supported me. So it's a shame that they weren't here to experience with everyone on the team.
Do you miss a bit of that energy that she brings?
Yeah, of course. We all miss her. We speak to her most days at the race meeting. Obviously, she's watching every session. Last weekend, we had her on the Zoom in the garage. So she was there, you know, in spirit and kind of digitally. But, yeah, hopefully it's not too long before everyone as a full team is back at the track and we can do it how we used to.
Importantly, though, did you make her cry?
I'm not too sure. That's probably her question.
She's a very emotional woman, isn't she, about the whole motor racing? So, yeah.
I love it. I love that.
She's very passionate, emotional. Yeah, you could say that.
Now, the win didn't come without its moments, did it? Talk us through the pit lane incident with Jamie and what you called wall grinding.
Yeah, there was obviously, you know, you want every race where you're in the lead or at the front to go smoothly and nothing happened. But safety cars obviously cause chaos, especially in races like that where we still have to pit for tyres and things. So I had to avoid everyone leaving my box, which was fine. Made that happen and had to get around Fabs. He was sort of half blocking the lane to get into his box. And then Jamie got released in front of me and then sort of squeezed me into the Armco. So there was a fair bit going on. And then obviously later on there was even another safety car, and after I had a bit of a lead and everything, so then you got to reset and go again.
So how much did all of your e-racing experience help you? The wall grinding seems like a bit of an e-racing activity with no damage.
Yeah, you sort of obviously, because he dropped, and if you back out of it, then you lose a position. So you got to stay up it, and then hopefully they don't hit you too hard. But at some point, it's going to be some contact, so try and minimalize it, and then by me actually sort of trying to avoid him a little bit, end up going halfway up the Armco, which worked out okay. The car was fine afterwards, but yeah, the E-Series stuff, I mean, there was plenty of wall grinding, most of it not intentional.
That was my experience of trying e-racing too.
Yeah. Most people struggle with it, especially early days.
Did you? So it didn't change your steering dynamics at all. Did you? It did no damage at all.
Things were a little bit out, like, but nothing that would slow the car down. The cars are built quite strong, and you know, you think how hard we hit curves at Gold Coast, Adelaide, Townsville, etc. A little knock here and there is okay. It's just when it hits it on the wrong angle, so it's very easily, you know, Jamie could hit me just, you know, wheel on wheel or something. It could have broke something, but yeah, it worked out okay. So obviously you drive for that next lap trying to feel the steering and make sure everything's fine, because you can only go crawling pace behind the safety car. But once you knew it was fine, we just press on and got the jobs to do.
Well, you're building strong enough, don't you, to be able to punt somebody out of the way if they're bugging you later on?
Yeah, you got to have everything in check for sure.
Now, this season's clearly been a weird one. We watched you quite intensely on the e-racing program for supercars and a few other things. I mean, how important was that for keeping your touch in for this year?
Everyone's a little bit different. Probably half the field, I would imagine, be something like me. We kind of use sim anyway before E-Series, before all that stuff, before COVID and everything, to train and practice and stay fine-tuned, especially over the Christmas break. So the break was probably similar to the Christmas break, but we only done a race beforehand. So the E-Series was good. I felt like we're back into Sydney and there was sort of no feeling that of awareness, where I'm sure there's a lot of people that were a bit the opposite, and it took them had to sort of change themselves a bit to get used to the E stuff. So it definitely helps you and keeps you in check.
You've been on the road for a while now. We've just done the double back-to-back at Darwin. Mm-hmm. Now we're heading to Townsville, which is a terrific little racetrack, isn't it?
Yeah, Townsville's awesome. It's sort of, you know, a street circuit where the whole town's into it. It's usually big crowds and everything. Obviously, this year it's going to be all different, so it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But as a track, it's awesome. You have a little bit of everything. It's kind of the street circuit, but there's a lot of the corners where the walls aren't against the circuit, so you get a little bit of both feeling. There's curbs, there's a bit of everything. It's really cool. And then you can see, like last year, sometimes you get hit by rain or something out of nowhere, and it really spices it up.
The unusual thing about this is that it's part street circuit, part racetrack, isn't it? So it's got the challenges of both of them.
Yeah, I always say to everyone, it kind of feels like a hybrid a little bit, sort of similar to like a Grand Prix in a way. It is a street circuit, but there's sort of half the track, you've got runoff, you've got grass and things next to the track rather than walls, where the other half, you know, you're straight up against walls. So if it's sort of like for most young people coming into it, it ends up being probably one of your first street circuits you ever raced. It was mine in Formula Ford, and it's kind of a good one to get used to because it kind of builds you up into the Adelaides and the home bushes and stuff back in the day.
And that turn 10, I reckon, is one of the best spots in Australia to watch supercars. You come firing around there, and as the surface changes, the car loads and jumps and fights. We really know you're working hard at that one.
Yeah. I'm sure to go over those railway lines, and then you flat out up against the fence. And if your car's not amazing, it's quite hard to get it flat, and you end up sliding out and almost in the fence every lap. So you sort of hold your breath and hope that you got it. And if you're tucked up behind a car and everything, you lose a bit of vision, and it's real cool.
Now, the difference this year is we're not doing two races. We're doing the 311-kilometre races as they are this time around to avoid having to do fuel stops. How much do you think that will change the dynamics of the event?
It's usually two big races, and it's quite physically hard and it's hot, and you sort of, you know, small kind of enduro style race. Obviously still sprint and you're still flat out, but it's got that, you know, you have to get to the end kind of feel. Where if you shorten it up a bit, you could probably be a bit more aggressive with your tires and stuff like that. So I mean, it will see, and then it'll probably take a little bit of the physical aspect out of it. But at the same time, you gotta do the whole race and then do another one in the same day is also quite hard.
And a top 10 shootout now instead of top 15, so there's no mucking around in qualifying, is there, for Saturday?
Yeah, back to the top 10. The top 15's been good in a way. It's helped me a couple of times. I've actually qualified out of the 10, but with the shootout and everything, got myself back in there. So it's sort of helped me a couple of times, but you can't afford to make a mistake in that last qualifying, be 11th or 12th if you've got a fast car and you deserve to be in there. You've got to make sure you put the lap together. So I have to make sure we do that.
Cool. Well, now we're going to test your memory and take us on a lap of the track. I mean, it's a big, long run with that kink, isn't it, from the start-finish line to turn two. What are you thinking about as you head down there?
There's a few different lines in the straight because there's a bit of a crest through the middle of it. So there's a couple of different ways to approach it. But basically, the whole time you're thinking about where do you brake, because you're going fast and the car's going to unload it. You've got to make sure you're straight and when you hit the brakes. And then there's another couple of different lines there because you've got the curb and you've got a bit of a new sealed patch and then you've got sort of the wide line. There's a few different ways to get through that corner, but mainly it all starts with braking. You can easily lock a front. There's a few lines across the track where it's a little bit less grip than the road and stuff like that. So generally you're coming through that kink and you just spot them out. It's about the 150 board or so and you're aiming for it every lap.
Mm. And because of those different lines, it's not a bad overtaking spot, is it?
Yeah, it is, because the fast way around there is it's quite a wide entry, and then widens up heaps and then sort of narrows down a bit. So it sort of promotes cars having to dive. And we always see that on the first lap.
Yeah. Now, the run from two to three, it's pretty narrow up there, isn't it? So you want to make sure you're coming out of two okay.
Yeah, exit's massive. There's a few different ways to do it. And like most street circuits, the grip, for some reason, not sure why, is always against the fence. So the closer you get to the fence, the more grip you seem to have. So it's kind of risky business. But, yeah, you have to have a pun and be right up against it the whole time.
And then as we peel off the main road, we head into the purpose-built part of the track, the 4-5-6-7 combination. I mean, nice flowing part of the track.
Yeah, it's quite good after all that intenseness of the first sector. You get to sort of go a bit quicker, have a bit of room for error as such, and you're basically using curb in all those corners. So the car's moving around a fair bit, and there's quite a bit of a technique to it, and you need to have the car sort of doing what you need to do to make it all work.
Yeah, and the 7-8 chicane, I mean, we've seen a bit of action there in the past. Not a bad spot to stick your nose up the inside of someone.
Yeah, it's okay.
Nice and risky, though.
Only problem is in the car, is if you go on the inside and then on the outside, and then, there's a high chance you're going to hit the fence or something. So basically, you need to have your car working over the curbs there, which is the key to speed, and then obviously drive off there. But that all comes from initial curb bounce, which this year is going to be interesting because it's going to be sort of the first time we're doing proper curb riding like that with the controlled damper.
And then we go through that 9-10 combination down to 11. And when we've spoken about that turn 10, I mean, just a terrific place. But 11's another spot where you could maybe get past if you've got 10 just right.
Yep, yeah, for sure. If you've got good drive and good tyre life, it's quite a good passing spot. Obviously, laying the brakes and then you've got a bit of curb on the inside you can use to get the car turned and everything. But yeah, if your car's really good on rear tyres, you come off there, you can hold it flat over the train lines and then bomb down the inside easily.
And 12, 13, I mean, 13's a nice tight hairpin. We've seen a few overtakes there in the past as well, but you're probably thinking more about coming out of there without burning up the rear tyres, I would have thought.
Yeah, 100%. And especially coming from Darwin to there, where we have heaps of grip at Darwin with the nice surface, we go to there and every time you get on the throttle out of that last corner for the first time, you always think the car's terrible. There's always no drive. And it takes you a couple of laps to get used to it and control your right foot a bit. So that's 100% important. And it's massive to lap time too to get to the line.
Now, what do we think about tyres up there? You've only got the 5 soft tyres, so we're not doing the different combinations this time around. I mean, are they going to struggle to make the distance? Are we back into a tyre wear situation?
With the soft tyres, we're always into a tyre wear situation because they're always better the lap before. So no matter what the situation was, they'll better the lap before. So the less you do on them, the less and the better your car is, it's always going to save tyres. So when you're limited for total numbers and you can't have a new set for every run, the cars and the drivers and everything that treat their tyres nicely but still getting lap time is always going to be rewarded. So we've seen it ends up happening most rounds. It's just a bit more highlighted now with obviously the restriction.
You talk about SMP, the tyre wear that was SMP right now, all that. To get a perspective, because I'm a dumbass, the tyre wear at SMP and the tyre wear expected at Townsville, is there a difference? Is there a similarity so I can get an understanding?
It's probably, I'm just taking a guess, we have numbers somewhere. It would be, say, you probably got, say you got SMP would be obviously max and Darwin would be minimal and then Townsville's probably halfway.
So SMP, let's say SMP's 10?
Yeah, you probably got a 4-5 area for Townsville and a zero for Darwin.
Wow.
It's kind of halfway in between.
Cool. Okay.
And how are you enjoying the compactness of the race weekends? I mean, you need to be right on the ball, don't you, when the car comes out of the truck, because you don't have much time to sort it out. So you really want to be on your game early.
Yeah, it's flat out. Especially, so the first Sydney and then the first Darwin, where there's no support categories, you get basically zero time in between. You know, you haven't even got time to take off your race suit or your race boots between. You basically go out of the car, speak to the engineer and just go, you know, obviously unload everything. Then he unloads a bit back. And then by the time that's all happened, you basically put your helmet back on. So there's no time to really sit down and relax, and you end up missing lunch and stuff like that pretty easily. But if your car's not doing what you want, it's going to be a hard time, because you haven't really got time to do big changes. You got basically the car you roll out with until the night. Yeah, you can only do band-aid fixes. So if it's really bad, you can't really do much without costing you a total weekend.
Well, at least you don't have to do sponsor commitments as much, do you?
Yeah, there's obviously less of that to do, which, I mean, is a shame, because we always have fun doing it. The way we do it's always really cool, and our fans are really awesome to hang around. We still obviously do stuff online and digitally as much as we can to keep everyone involved. But, yeah, it's basically just racing the whole weekend, which is cool in a way too.
Now, you're leading a bit of a nomadic lifestyle at the moment. What do you do between the two Townsville races? Do you go and do some snorkeling on the Barrier Reef, or do you just sit inside your hotel room and stay COVID-free?
Yeah, there's a few different ways to do it. I mean, I think a lot of it will depend on the results. If you have a bad time, you generally don't want to go out and have, you know, an out there life. But if you have a good race weekend, everyone's quite happy and you end up doing more things. So I'm quite lucky. I know a few people in most states. So, you know, people are willing to help out and always got, you know, a boat or something that they want to take out fishing or something. So I'm sure there's things to do. And at the same time, I've got my laptop and stuff with me, so I can do a bit of gaming by myself without going to the public and keep myself busy.
Let's hope you have a really good time between the two rounds and that we see you back at the front of the grid, because it's certainly great to have you up there.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Ed.
The 2020 Virgin Australia Supercar Championship Series has left Darwin and headed east to Townsville in far north Queensland. Not just chasing the sun, but escaping the impacts of COVID-19 to continue racing. Back-to-back super sprint rounds with three 111-kilometre sprints replace the traditional 400Ks over 2 days format that has delivered time and time again. Championship leader Scott McLaughlin says he's keen to extend his lead over Jamie Wincup, and the closing pack is just keen to get a win or at least tie down some consistent form. What's in store? Who really knows? But at least we gave it a crack. Join us next week as we review Townsville number one, and we'll let you know what happened. This has been Supercars in Preview.